From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Today, Michigan's House Speaker on the state's mental health system.
I was very clear that I believe that this system is so broken that even if we make substantial progress this term, it's going to be nothing more than a few raindrops in the ocean compared to what we need to do.
For years, jobs streamed out of Detroit to the suburbs. Now they're coming back.
There seems to be an announcement every other week of some corporate relocation. And in a lot of cases, it's coming at the expense of the suburbs.
The Grand Rapids High School teaching traditional classes and real-world skills.
Geometry class can only do so much. But if you're building a home, that's a lifelong skill that you will have.
Plus pickleball.
It's like Lay's potato chips. You know, they say you can't eat just one. You can't play this game one time without getting addicted.
Those stories and more for you today on Stateside. Hello and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Mackinac Policy Conference is in full swing. Michigan's decision makers gathered on Mackinac Island, and that includes State House Speaker Tom Leonard, who is with us now. Mr. Speaker, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to start by getting your take on some possible ballot measures. Now, for folks at home, once a voter-driven initiative is certified to be on the ballot, the legislature has 40 days and three options. You can amend and pass, and it would automatically become law without the need for the governor's signature, offer a competing proposal, or do nothing and let it go to the ballot. So the deadline for the legislature to act on the initiative to legalize recreational marijuana is June 5th, which is next Tuesday. I know you've said in the past there's not a lot of chance in the House that the House would take it up. So has any last-minute momentum been building?
No, I do not see that that has happened. And at this point, I would fully anticipate, the citizens will have to decide this. This is likely going to go to the ballot. There is very little support in the caucus. I mean, essentially, for those that are saying that there's momentum, this is like the equivalence of somebody buying five lottery tickets versus one lottery ticket. I just do not see it happening. And barring some miracle for the folks that want to see this pass, at least through the legislature, I do not see it happening. So we'll see what happens next week, but I fully anticipate this will go to the ballot and the citizens will have to decide this issue.
How concerned are you that having this on the ballot could drive more Democratic-leaning voters to the polls on Election Day?
Well, one, I'm not. Let me say this. First, I'm not. And I think that's a bad way to look at things. Anybody right now that is saying that we need to let that push policy, that's just wrong. That's not what we were elected to do. We were elected to do what we felt was best for our citizens, not pass policy based on whether or not Republicans or Democrats are going to show up at the ballot. So I just believe that's the absolute wrong reasoning. But second, I do not believe this is necessarily going to push Democrat turnout the way that many believe it's going to. I've seen two polls. I've seen one that shows that if this goes on the ballot, it will pass with over 60% of the vote. I've also seen polls that have shown once individuals are educated on this issue, it's got less than 50% support. So, you know, for me, I'm personally opposed to this. I was a former prosecutor. I've seen the damage that this can cause to individuals' lives. And I think this is something the citizens need to decide. And I do believe this is something that can be defeated at the ballot.
I'm going to pivot over to the initiative to repeal the state's prevailing wage law that requires union wages to be paid on all state projects. It has broad support among your caucus. So assuming the House will vote on this one, what's your timetable on taking that up?
Right. Well, this is one issue I really hate to assume because we've seen a couple of the individuals on the Board of Canvassers have really played politics with this. But assuming they do the right thing tomorrow and they follow this court order and they do certify this and it does go to the House and to the Senate, I would fully anticipate we will take this up at some point next week. I believe the support is there. This is something we need to do. We need to get done to protect our taxpayers. And I would anticipate it getting done next week.
Certification of the initiative that would create an independent redistricting commission has been put on hold to wait for the result of a lawsuit seeking to halt the measure. Should the suit fail and the initiative be certified, are you considering taking up something regarding redistricting in the House?
Well, this is something, I mean, that would be so much speculation because, you know, as you know, this lawsuit, as you mentioned, is out there. I don't want to speculate. What I would say is this, you know, I believe this is a very unfortunate and misleading ballot initiative. This is not a bipartisan initiative. This is something that is being run and pushed by the Democrats because they've simply lost election after election over the past 8 years. They claim they've got bipartisan support. To the best of my knowledge, there's one public Republican supporter right now, and this is somebody that endorsed and supported Hillary Clinton in the last election. So I'm hard-pressed to believe that this is bipartisan. I believe this is one-sided. It's being pushed by one side, and hopefully this thing will be defeated in the courts.
You're referring to former GOP Congressman Joe Schwartz.
Yes, that's exactly who I'm referring to.
You know, last time around, the legislature acted to keep a minimum wage increase off the ballot. And it looks like there could be another ballot initiative certified that would raise the minimum wage to $12 an hour by 2022 and gradually increase the percentage of the minimum wage that tipped employees get. Should that make it to the ballot, what do you plan to do?
Well, I personally would be voting no. I mean, this would be destructive for our state. This would take us back to the lost decade. I mean, even the waitresses that I talked to, I believe there's a union that represents waitresses and waiters are here at the island. They oppose this because they know how destructive this could be for their industry. I've spoken to restaurant owners. This will put many of them out of business. This will put us back to the times when we had 15% unemployment and, you know, lost nearly a million jobs. I don't know why anybody would want to reset the progress that we've made over the past 8 years, take us back to the lost decade. So certainly something that I oppose, and I will tell you, the people that this outside Washington, D.C. group claims that they are supporting, they are up here opposing this as well.
Another initiative that would require employers to pay mandatory paid sick leave looks like it's progressing and could get on the ballot. Business organizations such as the Michigan Manufacturers Association are against it. They worry it would be too burdensome. Again, should it make the ballot, what might you in the House do?
You know, I don't know what I could say about this that I didn't say about the minimum wage increase. Same thing. I mean, this would be a huge burden on employers in the state of Michigan. I think this would be a big hindrance to the progress that we've made over the past 8 years. Again, I don't want to speculate until everything plays out, till it's gone through the legal process. But certainly, if this lands on our laps, we'll decide what to do then.
We're speaking with State House Speaker Tom Leonard, and I want to shift over to one of your main priorities, Speaker Leonard, and that's fixing our mental health system. At the legislature's direction, a group consisting of HHS officials, providers, advocates, and health plan executives have been discussing how to better coordinate physical and mental health care, which would require some major changes in how Michigan delivers mental health care and who manages it. Now, they've been at it for about 2 years. What are your thoughts on where things are right now?
Well, certainly a lot of progress has been made. As you know, this has been a top issue or priority for me since I became Speaker of the House, and I was very clear from day one about two things. One, I didn't know where to begin. I just knew that we had a major problem that we had identified that we needed to fix, that we needed to resolve. But secondly, I was very clear that I believe that this system is so broken that even if we make substantial progress this term, it's going to be nothing more than a few raindrops in the ocean compared to what we need to do. We have made substantial progress. We put together a bipartisan task force. They sent a report to me in December. I believe we've passed about half of those recommendations, or at least made progress on at least half of those recommendations through the House over the past few months, and we're going to continue to work upon it. But certainly, delivery of resources is certainly something we've got to talk about. We've got to do a better job. I know a lot of progress has been made, and we'll continue to push forward.
But back to that integration, things seem to have stalled. What's it going to take to get some motion?
Well, we've just got to continue to push forward with legislation in the House. Again, this is a very, very tough issue. One of the things that has been very frustrating about this is when you get mental health groups, when they come in, when they have their meetings, when they talk to you, they typically tell you two things. One, it's that everybody else is doing it wrong and we're doing it right and everybody's got to do it like we do. And then secondly, they say the only way you're going to fix this is through more money, through more funding. There's no doubt that we do have to talk about the funding aspect of this, but we really need groups to come in that want to bring real solutions to the table, that will talk about how best to deliver these resources versus just coming in and saying we're the only ones that do it right, everybody else is wrong, and you need to do it the way that we are.
Speaker Leonard, we've got the sites and the partners already chosen for three pilot projects and one demonstration project to kind of move things forward and, most importantly, test new ideas. And they were supposed to begin October 1st, But HHS recently announced the start date could be delayed up to a year now. Why the delay?
That's a good question. You would have to ask them about that. That is not one I have the specific details on. What I've been focused on is the reform that's been part of our action plan. And what I can tell you is I can only control what we do in the House. We have made substantial progress on that action plan in regards to improving our mental health resources. That specific question, that is one you'd have to go to the administration on.
The private health plans certainly have been lobbying hard to have more control of the state's behavioral health system, and they say they can do the job more efficiently. Advocates are concerned more privatization could lead to lower quality services, especially for the most seriously ill. As you look at this, what do you think?
Yeah, I can't agree with that assessment. What I would say is what we have been doing is not working. We all know that. We know that we have a broken system. Now, I can't say with 100% certainty that if we turn this over to the private sector, it will be done better. But what I do know is that's a conversation we have to have because what we're doing right now is not working.
Well, Meridian, which is Michigan's largest Medicaid health plan, was just sold to WellCare Health Plans based in Florida. Meridian executives have been leading the effort on the health plan side. So speaking of WellCare, WellCare has paid out more than $200 million in settlements for fraud since 2009. That's according to the Department of Justice. And then in 2013, a federal jury in Tampa found WellCare executives, including the CEO at the time, guilty of filing expense reports to Florida's State Health Care Administration, overstating the amount the company spent on mental health services for Medicaid patients. Does any of that give you pause at all about letting health plans manage Michigan's $2.6 billion Medicaid budget for mental health?
Well, first, I'd say this. This is the first time anybody has actually brought those facts to me regarding WellCare. And, you know, I'm not going to speculate or cast judgment on somebody when facts have just been brought to me. But certainly, if that's true and that's happened, that's troubling. But we shouldn't allow, you know, two specific instances that have happened in one state to completely put us in a place where we're not moving the ball forward and at least trying to improve our system. So this is the first time those facts have been brought to my attention. I'm not going to speculate on those until I've had an opportunity to actually look at that more in depth and look at the facts before me.
State House Speaker Tom Leonard with us now from Mackinac Island at the policy conference. Thanks so much for being with us on Stateside.
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we'll visit Innovation Central High School in Grand Rapids, where students learn job skills in engineering, design and construction, business, entrepreneurship, health, technology, and more.
So we have all the curriculum that everybody has to have in the state, but we focus our electives on these professions and these careers, and the students buy into it.
That's in 5 minutes. You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. So the Truth Squad at Bridge Magazine reviewed a new video ad that goes after Gretchen Whitmer's record. Michigan Radio's Lester Graham reports on what they found.
Reporter Mike Wilkinson did the fact-checking on this new ad. He says it comes from a well-known conservative group.
The Americans for Prosperity Advocacy Group, a national group funded largely by the Koch brothers, bought a six-figure ad in Michigan. It's running online, and it attacks Gretchen Whitmer as being a classic tax-and-spend liberal Democrat, mainly focusing on her votes in support of tax increases that they believe contributed to the economic decline of the state of Michigan.
The video features a car that won't start, and then the ad sticks to that clunker theme, stating, "For 14 years, Gretchen Whitmer's policies failed to jumpstart Michigan's economy."
As a state legislator, she voted to raise income taxes, raise taxes on everyday services, raise business taxes, and even voted to raise gas taxes, exhausting our wallets.
The ad works to tie Whitmer to former Governor Jennifer Granholm. Republicans often blame Granholm for Michigan's so-called lost decade of economic downturn. The Whitmer campaign apparently was prepared for that comparison. It sent the Truth Squad detailed explanations on Whitmer's votes. Wilkinson says they include evidence that Whitmer also voted against Granholm on a number of occasions. The Truth Squad's first impulse was that the facts in the ad were correct. Whitmer did vote for those taxes. It did note the lack of context or revealing that Whitmer voted to repeal one of those tax increases. But then the political ad went a step too far.
Gretchen Whitmer's policies drove Michigan's economic engine into the ground. Why would we put her back at the wheel?
Wilkinson says it's hard to argue that the state's prolonged recession was caused by Whitmer's policies or her tax votes.
It says they occurred when the state was losing hundreds of thousands of jobs, and they flash on the screen the loss of over 570,000 jobs. And that's true. The state did lose that many jobs. But those declines had started before the tax increases. The context that is also greatly missing is in 2007-2008, the national and the international financial market collapsed.
The Truth Squad rules the ad is half accurate because it shows correlation but does not show causation. This ad is part of a nationwide campaign by the Americans for Prosperity Group. It's expected to spend up to $400 million in the midterm elections. Ironically, the Whitmer campaign is using the Americans for Prosperity ad in a fundraising appeal. She issued a tweet to her followers.
Whitmer immediately turned around and said, the Koch brothers are attacking me. They know I'm the strongest candidate. Why don't you give me some money? So, you know, she's using them as a boogeyman to benefit her own campaign.
The Whitmer tweet says in part that the Koch brothers, quote, "No, I'm going to get things done for the people, not special interests," end quote. Whitmer is competing with Abdul El-Sayed, Sri Tanadar, and Bill Cobbs to be the Democratic Party's candidate for governor. We'll be working with Bridge Magazine to bring you more Truth Squad reports throughout this election year. I'm Lester Graham, Michigan Radio News.
How do we tap into a student's passion, develop and retain talent? How do we turn out grads with the employable skills that businesses, nonprofits, and local governments in Michigan demand? School districts across the state are figuring out answers to these questions. Innovation Central High School in Grand Rapids is one of those answers. It puts four academies under one roof: design and construction, business leadership and entrepreneurship, modern engineering, and health sciences and technology. Stateside's April Van Buren went to see just what's going on in some of the classrooms at Innovation Central and brings us this audio postcard.
Okay, I would feel a pulse, and if I couldn't reach, then I would go inside of it, of your pant leg, and there we go. Can you feel me squeeze your feet? Can you push down? Can you push up? Okay, perfect. Hello, my name is Analicia Garcia. I am a fourth-year senior here at Innovation Central, and I am in the Academy of Health and Science. Now we're going to bring you to transportation as soon as possible. What makes Innovation unique is I feel like there's a passion here. When you're walking through the hallways, you see kids that are like determined to do things.
I feel like quote-unquote regular high schools are like they're teaching you what they're supposed to teach you, so like they're not focusing on what you want to do in the future. Innovation Central like takes it a step further into doing that. I'm Jose Paulino. I'm a senior in Innovation Central High School, and I am a senior also in the robotics team, Team 904.
Okay.
Let me just get this plugged in.
Okay, so this is our robot. It's a very tall robot. It's about 55 inches. A lot of wires. My name is Clarissa Gordon, and this is my first year at Innovation Central High School in the 10th grade, and I attend the engineering program. We do like a lot of hands-on projects, like we do the bridges, we do the cubes. I know in the junior year, you start creating smaller robots.
Our teachers of academy, they don't like give you paper and, oh, here's this, this is how it is. Like, they actually take you on field trips on how it works.
There was one place, it was a biomedical engineering place, and we went there, and that's when my like interest for health also came in, so I was thinking about doing biomedical engineering.
I have two teachers in the EMT class. One is a science-based teacher, Ms. Hodder, and then the other one is Mr. Pratan, and he actually goes on the trucks, the ambulances.
Remember, you can always have someone take C-spine from the front. So
recently, I went to the Metro Hospital. It was just me by myself, and I was with some nurses, and we took care of like five rooms, room 20 to 25, and I was just there like helping and just talking, and I know how to do these things now.
actually freshman year, I didn't even like, as soon as the bell rings, shoot out this classroom. But now, like, I see myself staying after class, talking about my work.
The past 2 years, 9th and 10th grade, there's been people that I've like have had in my life that came and they helped me get out there more, and it just gives me more like confidence.
I had a teacher, Miss Rambat, my sophomore year. She looked at me and she was like, "Annalisa, you got this. You can do this. You're strong." She was like, this is your future. It doesn't matter that you came from this environment or that your dad is in jail or that this has happened. You got this. This is your future. You are the one who your siblings are going to look up to. Now do this, look it in the eye and face it." It was like I zoomed off. I seen a future that I wanted to go to and I shot for it as soon as I could.
As part of our Grand Rapids live show, I sat down with Ronald Gorman, Assistant Superintendent of Pre-K through 12 Instructional Support for Grand Rapids Public Schools, and the principal of Innovation Central High School, Mark Frost. Ronald began by explaining the vision behind these four academies.
So in 2012, when Superintendent Teresa Weatherall Neal came to become our superintendent, we had these small schools that were scattered all around the school district, all of which were very successful. But Teresa said, you know what, we need to put all of these schools in one place. And at that time, Mr. Frost School was Central High School, home of the Rams, 421 Fountain Street for those folks who are familiar with the Grand Rapids area. And go Rams. But it was really an opportunity for us to put all of these phenomenal programs together that you referenced mm-hmm. earlier, and also just provide a lot of community support. And so we did that, and we took a high school that had about 300 students in it, and now it has close to 800 students in it. So over this 6-year period of time, it has become quite a draw, and I would like to believe it's because of the vision our superintendent had, or has, always has, and because of the great leadership we have in Mr. Frost.
How do students come to your school, Mark? What's the pipeline to get kids to Innovation Central?
Okay, so Central High School for 100 years on Heritage Hill was a neighborhood school, which meant if you lived in the area, you attended that school. It's no longer like that. So what I do is I go around and recruit at all the middle schools in our district, and I try to hit all the charter schools. And all you have to do is fill out an application. It literally takes 90 seconds to fill out, and we take every 8th grader, regardless of academics, attendance, or behavior. We take everybody coming out of 8th grade. This is our fifth year. We've had over 200 students each year enroll in Innovation Central High School. So it really is a draw.
And what do you hear from kids? What are reasons that they decide that they want to come to Innovation Central?
For most part, for eighth graders, it's their parents that want them to come to Innovation Central. But I think after they hear our message, and one of the messages we get out consistently is, who are you going to be after high school? We don't point to graduation as an end. We say, who are you going to be? And you got to be somebody. We want you to be a professional. We're trying to give you these skills and this knowledge to become a professional. And they buy into it over time. With the guest speakers and the experiences and the field trips and the curriculum that we have, they really buy into it by the time they're juniors, and especially seniors, when they know they're one step away from being real people in the real world.
What are the benefits, practically speaking, Ron, of having everybody under one roof, all four academies?
Well, if you go there on a Friday, there are so many adults at Innovation Central, mentors from the community, persons who are in business and industry. They're there every day. So they don't have to go to a million schools within our school district. They can go directly to Innovation Central. And I think that's one great strength that we have, pooling them all together. And we have so many business partnerships there. And when you talk about a practical approach, I think about the Academy of Design and Construction. So this is a program at Innovation Central where the students build habitat homes. Okay, so for the first 3 hours of the day, they're in their normal core instruction classes. And then students get on a yellow bus and go to the Northwest Side or the Black Hills neighborhood and actually build homes that persons live in. So if you think of some skills that they will have forever, I mean, think about that. The geometry class can only do so much. But if you're building a home, that's a lifelong skill that you will have.
That you realize all
absolutely.
That stuff in geometry actually has a real application.
Absolutely.
I want us to get, if we can, Mark, just kind of a quick flavor of the kinds of classes kids take and the skills they'll pick up in each of these academies. So I'm going to just run through them. Well, we got an idea with design and construction. What other kinds of skills and things do they do?
Okay, well, one of the things that we have English, math, science, social studies, art, phys ed, health, world language. We have all the classes that every high school has to offer in Michigan. But what we have in our health science class, we have our health science program is we have multiple health classes. So we have three different health classes you can take, but we have anatomy, physiology, medical terminology, and this ambulance class that you can take where you can become an ambulance driver, first responder, walking out of our school. You have to take the state certified test, you know, because you're working on people, but it's opportunities that hardly anybody else has in this area. We also offer this year is a Spanish interpretation class with a basis in health science vocabulary.
Wonderful.
And so we're going to roll students out as Spanish interpreters with that certification this year.
How about modern engineering? What kinds of things do they
take? So we have intro to engineering, we have principles of engineering, we have civil architecture and engineering, which are project lead the way classes. PLTW classes, which is a national program underwritten by GM, and it's really a lot of hands-on. We do robotics. We do VEX robotics science kits. They make things like solar-powered fans, solar-powered cars. It is hands-on application and coding, you know, starting the coding process so kids understand what that whole thing is all about because that's the coming technology.
And the business leadership and entrepreneurship, what are they doing?
Okay, so we have accounting, business law, marketing, entrepreneurship, and they work in the school store. So we have all the curriculum that everybody has to have in the state, but we focus our electives on these professions and these careers, and the students buy into it. And so if I can just throw this out, the last 4 years, we had graduation rates of 82 and 81% 3 and 4 years ago, which is very, very good for a population of 84% poverty. But the last 2 years, it's been 91 and 92% graduation rate, which really, it's remarkable. And that is all the buy-in from the students. They see the relevance of their electives as they tie into the general curriculum and what they can be and who they can be later on in life.
When it comes time to walk across and have you hand them their diploma and cap and gown time is done, what are these kids doing after? I mean, I guess I'm trying to get a sense where all this falls on the spectrum between, you know, college prep and vocational training.
It is. It's a wide range. We have students going into four-year universities, full-ride scholarships to Michigan every year, to Michigan State every year. Our top level is super top. Some students go for two-year programs such as medical coding, which is needed right now, and so you can do that within 2 years. But we also have many students who are going into certification tracks, such as the MTech program in Grand Rapids Community College, which focuses on welding, electricians, plumbing, those things that are really functional. But we also get students going right into the workforce in business, but in construction, in these areas where we really prepared them. So whether you game for college or not, we have a track for you.
Ron, where did you look for inspiration as you were putting this all together? Were there models either in this country or abroad that inspired you?
Gosh, I'm not sure there were models. And now it seems like everyone wants to do something comparable to what's being done at Innovation
Center. So you're the model now.
I'm not sure we're the model.
You've got something working.
Yeah, so nationally there's a big movement for wall-to-wall academies. Many of my colleagues have visited schools throughout the nation where they want to create career pathways for every single student in the building so that he or she can feel like they're a part of something. And so we really started this not with much of a roadmap, and it's amazing what leadership, staff buy-in, a tremendous amount of parent participation, because Mr. Frost will send so many mailers out and knock on so many doors to ensure he fills his gymnasium with parents. So it's amazing what a grassroots movement can do, and we're so excited about the future.
It seems very clear from what you're describing is what the options are there for these young people as they graduate, that you are meeting that challenge that has been laid down by business to schools in Michigan, which is give us workers trained in the skills we need. That's happening. So what, Mark, could administrators or districts across Michigan learn from what Grand Rapids Public Schools is doing right now with Innovation Central High?
Well, one of the things that we do is once a month each of our academies has an advisory board where we bring in people from the community. We bring in big business people, small business people, people from human resources, people from accounting offices, so that they can tell us what the real world is like. because I don't know exactly what happens in an engineering firm, but they do. And so they keep it real with us. And so much of the time, if you teach in isolation or you run your school in isolation, you're not sure exactly what the expectations are in the real world, and they keep it real for us. And so I think just the connection that we have with the community is unbelievable. Spectrum, Amway, huge businesses, small corporations, small businesses. It really is amazing what we have going. And I think other people could do the same thing, but it takes a lot of work and coordination.
And we need to end by looking ahead to next year, Ron. You're going to be adding the Academy of Teaching and Learning.
Yes, and we're so excited about this. We work in a school district where our students need to see teachers who look like them. And we are having an incredible teacher shortage, not only in the state of Michigan, but also nationally. So what we are doing with our Ferris State University partnership is we are going to try to grow our own. So next year, we are going to have our first cohort of teacher cadets at Innovation Central High School. So this will be our fifth career academy. This will be a program freshman through senior year, with the senior year being heavier on a classroom component and the freshman year really being learning about teaching, learning about pedagogy, things of that nature. But our hope is that after these students have matriculated through Innovation Central, have matriculated through Ferris State University, that they come back and become Grand Rapids Public Schools teachers, and that's the ultimate goal.
Wonderful work. Thank you so very much for sharing your work with us, Mark Fisher, principal of Innovation Central High, and Ron Gorman, the assistant superintendent with Grand Rapids Public Schools. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're going to head to a rec center in Ann Arbor and discover what's been called the fastest growing sport in America. Stay with us. You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. California billionaire and Democratic Party donor Tom Steyer is in Detroit today with Next Gen America. That's his campaign to register young people to vote in November. And Tom is with us now. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me, Cindy.
So tonight, Next Gen America, your nonprofit advocacy group and political action committee, is kicking off a 3-day boot camp in Detroit for 350 young organizers. What's the goal of this week's event, Tom?
Well, we are a grassroots organization that is focused on voters between 18 and 35. We are bringing in 370 people from around the country to Detroit to work with them and give them the skills so that they can organize, so that they can register people, so that they can canvass and they know how to address people and how to put together an organization. So it's really a skills training program so that between now and November 6th, which is Election Day, they can be as effective as possible.
Tom, you've got people coming in from all over the country. Why did you pick Detroit?
Well, there are a bunch of reasons we picked Detroit. First of all, since people are coming in from all over the country, it is central, and therefore it is easier for people to get to from both the East and the West Coast and the Midwest. Also, we didn't want to be on one of the coasts. You know, we're a national organization, and we wanted to make sure that people get a chance to see different parts of the country. So we're very serious about Michigan, and so it's perfect for us, given that they're going to do actual canvassing during this 3-day boot camp, that we be in a state that we take really seriously and where their work can really matter. So there were a limited number of choices. We're in 11 states. And so this was a perfect choice for us.
Historically, Tom, young people are kind of unreliable when it comes to voting. How do you expect to harness their attention and get them to the polls in November?
Well, Cindy, you're exactly right. Young voters vote at approximately half the rate of other American citizens. But they also happen to be passionate, knowledgeable on the issues, and the real issue is that they don't trust the system and don't necessarily like either political party. So what we try to do is engage them on the issues that they care the most about and to make it clear how important their vote is. And what we see is that if we talk to someone between 18 and 35, statistically they're twice as likely to vote as if we didn't talk to them. So our programs, our grassroots programs, have led to about 32% increases in turnout and a far higher number of young voters voting for the progressive candidate.
Tom, I want to pivot over to renewable energy because Next Gen Climate Action, one of your advocacy groups, bankrolled a ballot initiative here in Michigan to increase Michigan's renewable energy standard. It would have required utilities to generate more electricity from sources like wind and solar at a faster pace than previously mandated. So Michigan's two largest utilities, Consumers and DTE Energy, cut a deal with you. They agreed to increase the pace of their renewable energy portfolio in exchange for dropping the ballot initiative. Why'd you agree to this deal?
Well, I think it was a fantastic deal for the people of Michigan. And I think that it reflects the kind of business labor coalition that is so important for the future of this state. I think both Jerry Anderson, who is the chairman and CEO of DTE Energy, and Patty Poppe, who's the CEO of Consumers Energy, are dedicated to the environment. And they could see that clean energy is cheaper and that it is going to provide lower cost energy and put more people to work in Michigan. So that's great from an economic standpoint in terms of jobs and also costs, and great from an environmental standpoint. But more than that, we had support all the way along from the labor community as well as from other big businesses around Michigan. So what we really saw here was the kind of coalition that is looking forward, that's progressive, that understands that the future is clean energy, that the automobile companies are going to end up doing. There's no point in creating an electric car if you have dirty energy that you plug into. So to a very large extent, this was the Michigan community, business, labor, and community groups coming together to say, this is a future that is much more progressive, is going to create a lot more jobs, and it's going to be better for people from a health standpoint in Michigan. So I think it was a win-win-win. It's a no-brainer to me, Cindy.
Now, the Detroit News recently published an op-ed written by a policy analyst from the nonprofit, nonpartisan group, the Heartland Institute. And his argument was electricity rates in states with renewable energy mandates are rising twice as fast as the national average, and saying that wind and solar energy are much more expensive, and all of this could lead to higher costs and more financial challenges for low-income families. So what do you say to Michigan residents who could see their electric bills rising in the coming years because
of
this?
Cindy, the Heartland Institute is not a nonpartisan group. That is a far-right group of non-scientists and non-economists who are funded by the oil and gas industry. So that is absolute propaganda. It's dishonest at its very core, and I think that the assumptions there are false and intentionally false. If you go and look and see what it costs to create wind energy and solar energy in the United States and compare it to the cost of fossil fuels today, including natural gas, you'll see renewables are cheaper. The Heartland Institute is full of baloney, and they've been lying about this for over a decade. It's a fake place telling big lies, and they should never get away with it. They are so far from being nonpartisan. There is no one in the United States who is less reputable than the Heartland Institute.
Why did you choose to focus in Michigan for the renewable energy standard? You know, why here and not another state, Tom?
Well, we are also doing the exact same thing in Nevada and in Arizona. So actually what we were trying to show is that people across the country are in favor of clean energy, whether they're Democrats, independents, or Republicans. Because actually, completely contrary to the lies from the Heartland Institute, the lines have crossed, and American ingenuity and American entrepreneurship have made it so that the cost of renewables are cheaper. And so Americans know this regardless of political party. And so we wanted to show publicly when the debate is held in the town square, Americans of all parties vote for clean energy. And we wanted to do it in states that are reflective of the country, including Michigan. The fact that you have great leadership from your utilities and from your business community and from your labor community meant that they agreed to do something that I thought was totally sensible. And we'd love to do the same thing in every other state.
Tom Steyer, thank you so much for talking with us on Stateside today.
Cindy, it is such a pleasure to be with you.
One of the thorny issues being talked about at the policy conference on Mackinac Island is the future of regional transportation in southeast Michigan, particularly a proposed millage to fund expansion of the Regional Transit Authority of Southeast Michigan, the RTA, to the tune of $5.4 billion. Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes is with us now from Mackinac Island. And Daniel, you make a point in the column that today you co-wrote with Nolan Finley that regional divides that seem to be healing over are being ripped open again, and there's something bigger at work here than squabbling over a regional transit plan. What is that something bigger?
Well, I think the suburbs, for the first time in 30, 40 years, are starting to see the capital flowing south into Detroit as opposed to up the Lodge and up I-75 and out I-94 and I-96 to the suburbs. And they're becoming increasingly concerned. We're talking about hundreds of jobs. Tata Technologies moving from Novi to Detroit. Google moving from Birmingham to Detroit. There seems to be an announcement every other week of some corporate relocation. And in a lot of cases, it's coming at the expense of the suburbs. And I think the RTA squabble is kind of a flashpoint of a much bigger issue. Remember back when we were going through bankruptcy and the city was going through that process, that there were a lot of things that were regionalized, and some of which were forced on the suburbs by the federal court. The best example being the Water Authority. And I remember Mark Hackle of Macomb County was complaining about being pushed around by a federal judge, which is interesting. But nevertheless, he finally relented and they became members, and down the road they go. But I think this is an issue where they feel that the suburbs are going to be paying for and subsidizing Detroit. And they feel like, hey, we've been doing enough of that.
So when we see, for example, the published interview for Deadline Detroit, where Elbergs Patterson calls Mayor Mike Duggan a creep, Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle's basically saying RTA is dead. How bad have things gotten between leaders north and south of 8 Mile, in your view?
Well, my colleague Nolan Finley covered Coleman Young back in the heyday. That was before my time here in Detroit, but he says he hasn't seen this kind of acrimony since back in those days between regional leaders. There's a lot of frustration. The other thing that's interesting is the business community is squarely on the side of Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan. It used to be that the mayor tended to be a problem that they would complain about, that it was the city was anti-business. Now you have a mayor who's basically put an open for business sign on City Hall, and you've got suburban leaders who have long championed themselves as supporters of business, basically telling business to go hang. They're not going to do what business tells them. Mark Hackle said recently that he had a business leader come into his office and threatened to have him primaried if he didn't get on board. Now, whether or not that happened or how it happened, I don't think we're ever going to know. But I think he didn't take kindly to that. But it shows, I think, some of the things that are going on behind the scenes.
And with this new coalition of business leaders called the Employers for Transit Coalition saying, we stand behind transit, can they push back enough against Patterson and Hackle to get this question on the ballot for voters to decide, do you think?
No, I think a lot of us believe that this really is not going to get on the ballot. They still got some time. I heard this morning there's more discussions at lower levels of trying to get this thing back on track, and that may happen. It's important to note here that the mayor told us in interviews up here on Mackinac Island that he believed he had a deal, and they all thought they had a deal on this, and then Brooks and then later Mark Hackle broke from the deal, and they're very frustrated. And so, you know, where this goes from here, I'm not really sure. The other thing I think is likely to happen, if they don't get it on the ballot, that they try to get some legislation this fall that essentially shrinks the footprint of the potential RTA. So people who live way out on the edges of these counties, who probably have low millages anyway, and having to pay another millage for a service they're probably not going to use because of where they live, the one way to eliminate that is to shrink the footprint a little bit into the more densely populated areas of Metro Detroit.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel House checking in from the policy conference on Mackinac Island. Daniel, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been called the fastest growing sport in America, and it could be coming to a park or a gym near you. The game is pickleball. Stateside's Joey Horan went to the Mary Lou Murray Rec Center in Ann Arbor to learn more about the sport, and he brought back this audio postcard.
Let me tell you about this game that's sweeping the nation. It's not something that you'll find on Xbox or PlayStation. It's the fastest growing sport that no one's ever heard of. Just give it a shot and I'm sure you'll fall in love. Pickleball, what?
My name is Adam Schindler. I'm from Wayne, Michigan. I learned how to play pickleball last year in the summer. This is my very first tournament, so pretty excited about it. very nervous about it.
Kate Peterson, John Beckett.
My name is Pedro, Kate Peterson, and I've been playing pickleball about 4 years, and I live in Ypsilanti. Today we've got 64 players and 8 courts going at one time. It's played on a badminton-sized court. It's a doubles game, so it's similar to doubles tennis in that regard, a little smaller, and it's played with a paddle that is kind of like an oversized ping pong paddle and a wiffle ball.
How's it going? My name is Jim Johnson, and I'm a pickleball player here looking at one of the matches at Mary Lou Rec Center. We got probably 4 of the best players here playing on the same court right now. Greg's serving right now over at Eitan. Ball's going back and forth. This is nothing but a dink game. Once you get up to the net, you got to dink it back and forth. So it's not how hard you hit the ball, but it's how good you can dink the ball. So the strategy is to keep the ball as low as possible across the net and not lift it, because once it's lifted, it's usually sayonara and the point's over. Just like that. Well, the game was invented back in 1976, and the pickleball word comes from a dog named Pickles. And Pickles would always have to go and chase down the balls so that people could keep playing. So the owners of the game just named it pickleball.
My name is Dorothy West. I am from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I have been playing this game for about 2 years now. It's like Lay's potato chips. You know, they say you can't eat just one. You can't play this game one time without getting addicted. Everyone is embraced and brought into the game, and everyone learns the game. Doesn't matter your challenge in life, this is a game for everybody.
I'm not gonna lie, I drank a little too much coffee and I'm a little jittery and nervous, but it's really fun because I'm in the beginner group, so we're just here to have fun and everybody's very supportive. I am Amy McLaughlin, I am from Ann Arbor and I've been playing since October. My good friend is Kate Peterson and she's an organizer of the tournament. It just did so much for her life. I was like, what is happening? Why is everything so good for you? And she attributed a lot of her physical health to pickleball, so I just started.
I was walking around the track and I saw people playing a sport that I don't recognize. I said, but that'd be fun. So I tried it out and that's how I get started. I'm Bill Wen from Ann Arbor. I am 77. I've been playing pickleball for 7 years now. And I'm going to play until the day I cannot come to the gym.
To learn about pickleball's increasing popularity in our state, we turn to Jeff Shumway. He's the Ann Arbor Ambassador for the USAPA, the USA Pickleball Association. Jeff, for the uninitiated, just what is pickleball?
Well, pickleball is a combination of table tennis and tennis. The key to this game is it's a game of different skill levels and age levels, so older people can actually beat the younger folks up quite a bit on this if they put in their time. And it's played on a much smaller court. It's actually played on a doubles badminton court. The size of the court allows older folks to compete with the younger.
What kind of growth have we seen in Michigan?
We've seen phenomenal growth in Michigan because of the snowbirds. Now, the snowbirds have basically migrated south and brought this sport back. We had, at the Mary Lou Murray Rec Center in Ann Arbor, we had like 7 or 8 players playing 3 years ago. There are 60 players on any given Saturday now sometimes. We used to have to beg people walking around the track, do you play tennis? If you play tennis, come down here and try this. They're played in recreation centers. They're playing them in churches, gymnasiums. It's popping up everywhere.
So what is your pitch to other communities around Michigan about embracing pickleball?
I would say that if you don't want your folks leaving your area to seek pickleball somewhere else, you better get on board. Anytime somebody leaves their general area to go somewhere else, that actually is, you know, a commerce problem, basically, because people are going to eat and dine and do other things. So your city or your township should be looking really into this pickleball thing because it is phenomenal.
And as you say, you can take your tennis court and it can live and coexist happily with
yes,
the pickleball court.
Yes, very much can. And if anybody ever needs to, you know, get other information for the USAPA website, has every bit of information you need.
Jeff Shumway is the Ann Arbor Ambassador to the USA Pickleball Association. Pickleball for everybody. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
So we did a little research, and it turns out there's some debate surrounding the origins of the sport's name. Many say pickleball's founding family, the Pritchards, named the sport after their dog Pickles. We asked reporter Tristan Barrick about this canine connection.
No, the Pritchard family dog came later. About 2 years later, they got a dog, and they named the dog after the game. I think for marketing purposes, the game being named after the dog kind of works better than the real story, which is that it was named after kind of an element in crew rowing where the slow boat is called the pickle boat. And what makes pickleball is kind of the slow moving ball compared to tennis.
Well, that's quite the pickle. And that's our show for today. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you so very much for listening.